Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Front Lines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Okay, Iran is supplying Russia with short-range ballistic missiles. They've been providing them with drones and other stuff, and we're upset that the missiles are being delivered. So, we're threatening Iran with sanctions against Iran Air, Vafa Wholesale, and Sea River Service, obviously all Iran businesses. And our Department of Treasury will apply sanctions against 10 individuals and 6 entities for facilitating the transfer of drones and missiles from Iran to Russia. I don't think sanctions are wrong, but I'm wondering why we haven't had them in place since Iran and their proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah have been attacking Israel nonstop. Why only now are we doing all we can to restrict and hurt Iran? Duh. Okay, Front Lines of Freedom makes an effort not to be too political, but who becomes our next commander-in-chief does hugely affect our military. To date, the campaign seems to be Harris having a huge number of ads condemning Trump and a few ads promising things that are practically not able to be done. And Trump speaks about what he's done and will do. It's worthy of note that Ms. Harris became the first Democrat in almost 3 decades not to be endorsed by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, with the organization's own polling showing rank-and-file members overwhelmingly backing President Trump. Okay, stay tuned, troops. All this affects us. Joining me at the 50-caliber microphone today is, of course, Marine vet Skip Coriel. How did the Second Amendment march go at the Michigan State Capitol, Skip? I had fun there.
Oh, I had fun, too. I think everyone did. I've heard nothing but good reports back from all the people that attended. We had several hundred people there. It's nice going to the Capitol, being surrounded by honest, law-abiding citizens, carrying guns, smiling, and having a good time. It was great.
It was indeed. That's a good summary. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss people who want to have political opponents killed. Then, Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Navy vet and Congressman Guy Reichenthaler from Pennsylvania will discuss his service and its challenges. Next, Karen Schoen will discuss public school education in America. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games, and Diane Raver will present the movie of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel of Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, the entire senior command of Hezbollah's Radwan Special Forces Unit was wiped out in an Israeli airstrike a week ago. New details are emerging after an airstrike in Beirut's Daya neighborhood killed Radwan Commander Ibrahim Al-Kthin. It came hours after a tech attack led to pagers and walkie-talkies exploding all across Lebanon as fighting in the region continues to intensify.
Israel didn't start this war, but they're obviously no longer willing to have a ceasefire and then wait for the terrorists to break it. Good job, Israel.
And Russian leader Vladimir Putin will not fly to the inauguration of Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum. Quote, "We have received such an invitation. We are grateful to the Mexican side for this," the Russian government said. However, no clear answer was given as to why Putin refused to visit Mexico, saying only that Moscow acts in accordance with protocol practice. Mexican President Obrador emphasized that it is impossible to detain Putin and it is not up to them. You see, Mexico is one of the countries party to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, and it was the ICC that issued the arrest warrant for Putin. On August 7, Mexico invited Putin to the inauguration of Claudia Sheinbaum, which will take place on October 1st. Ukraine's embassy called for Putin to be arrested if he arrives, as Mexico recognizes the jurisdiction of the ICC. The EU has also called on Mexico to arrest him. An arrest warrant for Putin was issued by the ICC in March 2023 for the abduction of Ukrainian children, and he has since avoided traveling to countries that are signatories to the Roman statute.
I'm not sure why Mexico would want Putin to visit them. Maybe to visit some of the Russian refugees waiting to illegally enter our nation that are there. Anyway, this is a humorous aspect of politics.
And India is considering selling as many as 2,500 tanks. Ukrainian media are already speculating about which countries might be interested in purchasing these machines. Many African nations are on the list. After being withdrawn from service, the tanks must undergo major overhauls and upgrades before being put up for sale. India primarily possesses T-72M variants, which were built between 1980 and 2000 in one of its defense factories under license and in collaboration with Russia. India defines itself as neutral in the Russian-Ukrainian war and continues to maintain trade relations with both countries. Over the years, many defense agreements have been made between Delhi and Moscow. Recently, however, the Indian government has shown interest in Western equipment. It has decided to purchase American P-8 Poseidon patrol aircraft and is interested in German submarines and French Rafale M fighters. However, completely cutting off India from Russia is impossible, as Delhi needs components for its post-Soviet weapons and does not want to facilitate closer relations between Moscow and Beijing. It is difficult to predict how the Indian authorities would respond if Russia were interested in the decommissioned T-72M tanks.
You know, you just never know what's going to happen next. However, we do know that we need to get some competent leadership in our military. This is crazy.
And a pair of Russian Su-27 aircraft intercepted a U.S. MQ-9 drone. Quote, they dumped fuel upon and struck the propeller of the MQ-9, according to U.S. European Command. The unsafe intercepts forced our forces to bring the MQ-9 down in international waters.
I wonder what that was all about. One thing is clear. We can't trust Russia with anything.
And Russia is said to be fully ready to resume the testing of nuclear bombs in the Arctic for the first time since 1990. The chilling disclosure came amid calls for Vladimir Putin to use such an apocalypse explosion as a warning to the West over Ukraine. It would show the Russian president is ready to go nuclear and could prevent Western approval for their long-range missiles to be used by Ukraine against military targets inside Russia, test proponents believe.
One thing this does is to show how badly Ukraine is hurting Russia and how well Ukraine is doing in the war. Putin is clearly desperate to do this, as his nation will also be hurt by such nuclear explosions. Now, the question is, do we let Putin push us around, or do we yield to him? Our leadership right now is awfully weak. Stay tuned.
And the Navy's Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Lisa Franchetti, rolled out a document this month laying out her vision for the fleet, a set of several lofty goals in a wide swath of areas that the Admiral says will be met in 2 years' time. Both the document itself and Navy websites talk about goals, including filling all service jobs to 100%, clearing out years of maintenance backlogs, and providing a barracks room to any sailor who wants it. Each of the goals is even assigned a single accountable individual in the plan. However, when asked what accountability will look like should the Navy fall short, officials backed away from the stronger language inside the document and instead described the goals as aspirational or stretch goals. The top officer's plan, known as NAV Plan 2024, comes 2 years after the last Navy-wide plan that was released by her predecessor, Admiral Michael Gilday, and nearly a year after she was confirmed by the Senate in the top post.
A Washington, D.C. think tank stated that the goals are both realistic and agreed upon by the senior military veterans on their team. That's great, but accountability is a big issue, one that needs to be addressed. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. Then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Congressman Guy Reschenthaler. At ease, troops, take a break. If you ever have to defend yourself or your family, you will likely need legal support, as there is almost always an investigation. After you call 911, call U.S. Law Shield so you can have immediate legal support. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events they never thought would happen to them. Their attorneys are available 24/7, 365. Learn more or sign up at uslawshield.com, promo code frontlines. That's uslawshield.com, promo code frontlines.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. According to the FBI, 85% of altercations don't rise to the level of deadly force. Make sure you have some open-handed self-defense skills or pepper gel to ward off these less than lethal attacks. Always have a plan to repel non-lethal attackers and make sure you are in compliance with all self-defense laws in your jurisdiction. This is just one way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin and Bullion. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. There is a real ongoing war in and around Israel. That's pretty obvious. Given that since its founding, Israel has been under attack by radical Muslims, who are the agents of Iran for the most part, and committed terrorists. Israel is called the little Satan. We are called the big Satan, so they don't like us either. There's no question that all of the terrorists want all Israelis dead. That's their stated goal, and they work nonstop at it. While Israel isn't under attack every day, the attacks are frequent and often target civilians. Hey, look at the event a year ago. I think it's safe to say that the radical Muslims hate all Israelis. I wouldn't be surprised if most Israelis hate the terrorists. They are at war. They're not a single nation. It's an unfortunate but reasonable result of hate and war for people to be glad when another human being is killed. And then there's the United States of America. We are a nation of refugees. We are in many ways different, but our nation was built on our common love for and support for our nation and our diverse people. We're not a democracy, but a constitutional republic. That is a nation of laws, not opinion. The laws protect minorities from being abused by the majority. That is equal treatment under the law. There can be, and often are, multiple solutions to any problem, and different people can strongly desire their solution. Indeed, this is much of what happens in politics, where things are discussed, debated, argued about, and sometimes a solution is achieved. Oh, and the days of political opponents having duels are long, long past. There have been a few shootings of presidents in our history, and those are very upsetting and wrong. President John Kennedy was in office for much of my time at West Point. I marched in his inauguration parade in January of 1961 and was a senior on guard duty in 1963 when he was killed. I didn't vote for him and was not a fan of his, but I was horrified when he was murdered, and I prayed for his family. I think this is probably typical of all those who didn't vote for him. That was how Americans acted. Those were America's values. But very recently, former President Trump was shot once in the ear and was a target for another would-be assassin as he played golf. And I hear some normal Americans saying they wish he was dead. Really? Okay, his opponents compare him to Hitler. Hitler? Really? My mother was a German Jew, so I've really studied Hitler. I see absolutely nothing similar between the two. And someone wrote a plan called 2025, which apparently is something very nasty for our nation that would turn us toward a dictatorship. And Trump's enemies regularly say this is Trump's plan for the future. But Trump says he's aware of 2025, but he's never read it, and it's not his plan. there is little in that plan that any reasonable person would seek to do to our nation, and certainly not someone who loves our nation, as Trump clearly does. But those who hate him have decided he needs to be dead, and they're promoting a hate theme aimed at him, and apparently it's working, as the hate theme is being repeated nonstop on the media, who doesn't seem opposed to it, and by his opponents. Let's look at Trump's actions before he was president. He was a very successful businessman and popular on media. He was admired by many. Then, as president, he was successful. Let's see, our nation was energy independent for the first time in ages. Indeed, we were able to export energy. Gas was much less than $2 a gallon. Our southern border was as secure as it had been in generations. He had hoped to get Mexico to pay for a wall. They wouldn't, but they did start holding all would-be immigrants in Mexico until they could apply and be accepted by our nation. Our economy was great. Prices and jobs were stable. I could go on. Oh, and he did all this while being twice falsely impeached. So what did he do that suggests that he was planning to go Hitler? Absolutely nothing that I can see, and I'm certainly not suggesting that he is or was in any way perfect. He sure isn't. So what has happened to America that a man who gave up a very successful and comfortable lifestyle to serve our nation, and now it's okay to wish that him to be killed? Folks, this is not the America that I fought to protect and defend. I'm not intending to confront those who dislike him and don't plan to vote for him. But I do challenge those who would rejoice at his death, encourage his death. Please think and pray about your position. I suggest that it's evil. Oh, and it's become clear that Iran is seeking Trump's death too. Are those who wish Trump's death affected by Iran? I don't think so. But what better way for Iran to achieve their goals? Perhaps there's a relationship. Why wouldn't Iran try this on the great Satan, and especially on the president who cut so much support for them that they could barely survive? Iran wasn't able to build wealth or support terrorists until the Biden-Harris administration took the financial restrictions off them. We need to stop hating each other. We really do. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Front Lines of Freedom. And now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, Colonel, this past week, we saw the retirement of the last of the Air Force's 60 KC-10s. On September 26th, jet tail number 79-TAC-1948 took off from the Travis Air Force Base at about 10:15 a.m. Pacific. Its call sign was Gucci 10, a salute to the Gucci nickname and motto of the 9th Air Refueling Squadron, who was the last to operate the KC-10s. The KC-10, it was headed to the Boneyard in Arizona to join all the other KC-10s, which have been in service since 1980. And after 44 years, it was time to retire the airframes. The KC-10s were known as the Big Sexy, and they could haul nearly twice as much gas as the older KC-135s and almost as much cargo as a C-17. The KC-10s were based on the McDonnell Douglas DC-10 airliner, and they retained 88% of the airliner systems. So this made maintenance great, as the parts were always available. The KC-10's vast fuel tanks paid off during the longest fighter combat mission in history. On April 14, 1986, 24 F-111 strike fighters and 5 EF-111 electronic warfare variants took off from the Royal Air Force Base in Lakenheath, England, to strike targets in Libya in response to a terrorist attack on a Berlin disco. The French and Spanish governments, however, refused to allow U.S. aircraft to fly over their countries en route to the strike. So the fighters had to circle around much of the continent in a 6,400-mile, 13-hour trip, which was much longer than the standard F-111 sortie of about 2 hours. The mission became known as Operation El Dorado Canyon and depended on nearly 30 KC-10s and KC-135 tankers to refuel the fighters multiple times on the way there and back. The KC-10s have now been replaced by the new Boeing KC-46 Pegasus, which is based on the 767 airliner. So the refueling mission will continue. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always enjoy you. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Navy vet and Congressman Guy Reschenthaler. Then we'll talk education with Karen Schoen. All this is coming up I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
For over 10 years, Concerned Veterans for America has been fighting for better health care options for veterans.
Thanks to our thousands of activists around the country, we've been able to expand options for veterans who use the VA for their care.
But there is more to be done, and you can help. We need voices just like yours to call on Congress to continue reforming the VA and empowering veterans with more choice over their care.
Learn more and join the movement by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Representative Guy Reschenthaler. He's a Navy vet from Pennsylvania. Guy went to law school and volunteered to join the Navy, where he served as a JAG, a military lawyer. He voluntarily served in Iraq, where he prosecuted terrorists. Then he defended three Navy SEALs who were being wrongfully persecuted by the Obama Defense Department, and he got them off. This is the kind of guy I like. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Hey, Danny, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to join you, and I just appreciate you giving me the time.
Guy, start by telling us about your time in the Navy. Why did you join? And talk about your deployment to Iraq.
So I always wanted to join the Navy, probably since middle school, certainly into high school. I really wanted to not only be in the Navy, but I wanted to be a Navy JAG in particular. And I mean, a lot of that is because I'm a child of the 90s. So we, you know, grew up watching A Few Good Men, grew up watching Top Gun and those kind of movies. But also my dad had a best friend that was a Navy JAG, and he would tell me about the courts martial that he handled and in his career. And I just wanted to do that. I thought it would be so cool to not only be a lawyer, but also be one that was serving in the military, specifically the Navy. So I was very fortunate. I got in the JAG Corps. It was a tough acceptance rate. It was like a 6% acceptance rate. When I got in, it went all the way down to 2% acceptance rate. So I consider myself very fortunate. And then I got in, I went to Norfolk, Virginia for a year, and then I volunteered to deploy to Baghdad, Iraq. And I'm so glad I did, because that was an amazing deployment. I deployed in 2009, and I was at the Central Criminal Court of Iraq. So what that was that was a federal court system in Iraq. Part of what they were responsible for was prosecuting terrorists for any crimes against the coalition forces. So in that role, I prosecuted just under 100 terrorists and had just under 100 convictions, 13 death penalty convictions. Just an amazing experience for not only a young man, but a young lawyer that was serving. At the end of my deployment, I came back to Norfolk, Virginia, and almost immediately, I'm talking about maybe the day I got back or within a day or two, was assigned a case with a Navy SEAL who was falsely accused of detainee abuse. He was accused of punching the butcher of Fallujah in the face. It was completely ridiculous. It didn't happen. But the Obama administration took the word of a terrorist over the word of an entire Navy SEAL team. It was SEAL Team 10. And so I went back to Iraq in 2010 to defend the Navy SEAL. I was representing the lead petty officer who was the first one tried. I got to cross-examine the butcher of Fallujah, showed that he was basically lying about the entire situation. I impeached him on the stand. The government's case fell apart very quickly. And my client, the Navy SEAL, was fully acquitted. I then was a consultant on the next two cases. Ultimately, the Obama administration only charged three SEALs. So for the next two, I was a consultant, particularly for the cross-examination of the terrorist and how to set that up. And those Navy SEALs were all fully acquitted. I did that, became the officer in charge of Navy legal for Texas and Oklahoma, litigated cases all over the United States defending sailors, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen. got out of the Navy, and within a year got elected to be district judge in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. And that's really where my political career took off.
Well, the fact that you were able, one, had the opportunity, and two, took it, and three, were successful in protecting active duty military people in combat zone from being convicted for behaving in combat. I mean, even if he did hit somebody, I guess it's the Army Ranger in me coming out, but why would anybody take the word of a terrorist over the words of some of our bravest American warriors? I mean, I'm aware of this kind of stuff happening before. I've worked on a couple of situations like this, not with right. SEALs, but with Army guys. And that's outrageous to me. And I would suspect that that's given you a great sense of satisfaction to be able to say you did that.
Absolutely. It's one of my proudest achievements is defending my client, the lead petty officer on SEAL Team 10, and getting him fully acquitted. You know, I'm very thankful that I was in the position to do that. But why the military went after these Navy SEALs, it's very simple. It's because our rules of engagement and our adherence to laws of war are a huge detraction from our lethality as a fighting force. You couldn't have won World War II if we had the rules of engagement that we had during the global war on terror. I mean, you look at what happened on D-Day. I just got back from D-Day. You look at what happened on D-Day. If you had a bunch of JAGs running around telling paratroopers who they could and could not shoot, you wouldn't have won the battle. It just would not have happened. I digress, but the rules of engagement are absolutely absurd. They tie our hands and they prevent us from fighting enemy with full lethality to our detriment. Now, the Obama administration, just like the Biden-Harris administration, is part of this ilk that they're always blame America first. And that's just not America the country. You see, they do that in foreign affairs all the time. But also, they will blame people that are fighting for the country and take their word over the word of terrorists. And you saw that play out. And then, of course, at the upper echelon of the military, particularly the Navy JAG Corps, you have a lot of leftists, a lot of people that are ardent liberals in the American sense, not classic liberals that just want limited government, but true believers in leftist ideology. And they're there really to push their ideology, not necessarily to help the Navy SEALs or the surface warfare officers or the Marines on the ground. They're there to push an ideology first and foremost. And it's a problem. And you see this play out in recruitment. I mean, we can talk about the recruitment problems that the military is having, but it's directly attributable to the fact that the military has gone woke. They're not recruiting from your traditional segments that you would recruit from in the past, and it's leading to these problems that we're having in recruitment and retention as well.
Yes, sir, I agree. I was recently in, I'm a Vietnam vet, and I got a number of awards for valor over there, and I was recently interviewed on that, and half of the battles I was in, I don't remember anything about what happened after the fighting started because I went on automatic. It's sort of like when I was playing football. Once the ball snaps, you don't think, you react.
Right.
And I can't tell you what I did. I led my unit. We were successful, but I don't remember. And that's a most effective way of doing combat. So this is a very awkward situation. That's an understatement. And I guess it's something that we hope we can change if we get another administration in. Is that something you think can happen?
Well, I totally agree. But not only do we need to get President Trump in office, but then he's got to have the ability to basically clear the decks. We've got to change that. We've got to change the rules on being able to get rid of bureaucrats, not just in the military, but in all the government agencies. So that's going to be a really big problem because you have some people call it the deep state. Other people call it permanent DC. Really what it is you have a class of bureaucrats that know that they've just got to survive 4 to 8 years. And you, the elected official, the president, you name it, will move on and they'll still be there in their office calling the shots. And there's zero repercussion for them. So we've got to have the ability that when a new administration comes in, you can get rid of the upper echelon and bring in people that are going to do the job. And not just in the military, but also, I mean, that goes EPA, USDA, any government agency, you name it. We've got to have the ability to bring in our own people. And that's really what thwarted President Trump in his first administration. is there were people that were undermining his agenda. And these are the same people, by the way, that every 5 seconds are saying threat to democracy. The threat to democracy are the unelected career bureaucrats that are undermining the will of the people by sandbagging a popularly elected president. So we've got to focus on that. But in the military in particular, and thank you for your service, Denny. I know you were in the Tet Offensive. I think that's absolutely incredible and just absolutely fascinating. Thank you for taking part in the war. But if you look at it, the United States hasn't won a war since World War II. And that's not because we're not the best fighting force. That doesn't mean that we don't have the absolute best men and women in uniform. We do. It's because bureaucrats in the Pentagon, top military brass who will sell out their men for their own advancement, politicians in Washington, D.C., the bureaucracy will cut the legs out from our troops and make it damn near impossible for us to win these wars.
There's more to discuss about our nation's challenges, and guys, going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, I used to before I got into my mid-80s. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Di and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Congressman Guy Reschenthaler from Pennsylvania. Guy, we were talking about what I call the swamp in Washington, yes. D.C. Because as I understand it there, if you're the head of one party, maybe in the House, and I'm the head of the other party, yeah, we call each other names, we fight each other, but we keep the power here. If you don't have it, I have it. And we keep it here and we protect it here and we appoint people that will help us do that. That's part of the deal, in my opinion. Am I close to your experience?
Yeah, well, absolutely. The problem is that you had a situation for years in Washington, D.C., where as you move to the top of each political party, the differences between the political parties were less and less. So you had what some refer to as a uniparty scenario. President Trump came in 2016 and totally upended that because for once the voters had a decision between the status quo and the establishment or a more populist movement, which is turned into MAGA, as it's known. The bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., again, permanent, you can call it permanent D.C., you can call it the deep state, whatever, but they fought tooth and nail. And that's why you saw the FBI sandbagging and setting up President Trump before he was even sworn in, going after those that were closely aligned to him, and frankly setting up this false narrative that Russia colluded to steal the election in 2016. That was the start of the backlash from the bureaucracy in DC. And what we've got to do if we want to take back power is we in Congress have to say, the agencies must come to heel. We should pass a law called the RAINS Act, which would require congressional approval for regulation that's promulgated by the agencies. Because right now, you could have some unnamed bureaucrat in, let's say, the USDA that makes a policy regarding agriculture. We in Congress don't vote on that at all. If you don't like it, you can't go after that bureaucrat and kick that person out of office because you don't even know who that bureaucrat is. And they're a lot of times with these agencies, they are the judge, jury, and executioner. This is a fourth branch of government that the founders never intended. And I blame Congress entirely for giving up this power and also refusing to take it back. So hopefully when Trump gets reelected, we can make some movement there and bring back the power to Congress and by extension, the people.
Yeah, we the people need to be able to have a big impact on our government.
And yes.
Of course, one of the problems is we, the people, don't even know who our elected officials are. So we need to wake up the American citizens to get involved, because I believe this country is a gift to us from God, and he expects us to be good stewards, taking care of what he gave. And that involves knowing who you're voting for and holding them accountable. But I agree totally with what you're saying, Guy. We've got to get our government under control, and you're very correct. I taught American government for 15 years at college, and you probably experienced more than I ever learned. But the lifelong bureaucrats who belong to a union in Washington, D.C., and can ignore you totally, regardless of what position you hold, if you're the Secretary of the Navy or Army or something else, they can ignore you and get away with
right.
it. Our country needs more than that. And I think you're leading to saying we need to get a Congress that will be totally focused on making America, America? Is that a fair statement?
It is. And we also need remember that when we, and you know this because you taught at the collegiate level, but the founders never intended for the parties to be the dominant form of political discourse and that the ultimate arbiters of where we go. They thought that the institutions were going to be competing against each other. So they thought that the executive branch would be in competition with Congress, and Congress would never relinquish power to the executive branch. Now what you have is you have people that are not necessarily loyal to the institution that they're in. They're loyal to their ideology. And I'm loyal to my ideology. I'm a Republican, but I also am in Congress. And I think that we should be taking power as a Congress back from the executive branch. And the conflict should be largely between the branches of government, not necessarily with the ideology. But right now, because the president has so much power and the executive branch has so much power, you almost have to wage the political fights on an ideological level, because whoever is in the White House is really determining the policy moving forward through all the executive agencies, not necessarily Congress. It's totally backward from what the framers intended when they were setting up this government.
Yes, sir. One of our biggest problems is most people in Washington, D.C. have read the Constitution, much less adhere to it. And that applies to most citizens, too. And we've got a Constitution that should keep us in line if we just follow it.
Well, Danny, not only do they not read the Constitution, I mean, the Democratic Party holds the Constitution in disdain. They think of it as this old document that was written by a bunch of dead white guys, and they have zero respect for it. I think it was just Times had a piece. I think it was Times or maybe the Washington Post, but it said the headline was, "Is the Constitution a dangerous document?" It's quite amazing the disdain for which they hold our founding documents. But if they want to totally change the political landscape, they know that the Constitution is a huge impediment to it. So they have every incentive to undermine it, discredit it, and ignore it, because it is what is standing between them and their ideological endgame.
Well, we the people can't put up with that, because it's our government. But we have to hang on to it, and we have to have those values, and we have to know how to do that too.
Of course.
And this coming election is one of the ways on the how to, isn't it?
It is. And I tell everybody, I say, look, get involved. I speak at a lot of events. I talk to a lot of grassroots folks, and they always say, what can we do to make a difference? Well, first off, we got to vote. Our voter turnout needs to be high, not just for this election, but every single election. We also need to get involved. This can be as simple as putting up yard signs, going door to door, running call banks, you name it. But we've got to get more involved in the system because the Democrats are very motivated and they're very involved. We also need to start to donate more politically. The Democrat, 20% of the Democratic base donates, only 2% of the Republican base donates. Now, I think a lot of that is cultural. I think the Democrats have replaced tithing with giving to political candidates. And our people are largely tithing with some of their disposable incomes. So that's cutting against us. I'm not saying we shouldn't be tithing, but I think that factors into it. The other thing we need to do, and I tell people this, you make every day election day when you vote with your wallet. When you vote with your pocketbook, when you boycott woke businesses, liberal businesses, and but also supporting conservative establishments, that makes a big difference too. So I encourage people to support conservative companies and not to support woke or left-leaning corporations.
Good point. Guy, we're about out of time, and I appreciate your perspective on our nation's issues, and I'm sure you're running for re-election. Can you take a minute now and tell listeners how, if they wish, they can stay in touch with you and or support your campaign? You're the kind of guy we need in Washington.
Hey, thanks, Colonel. I appreciate it. The best way to find me is at G Reschenthaler. That'll take you to my X handle, Facebook, and Instagram. So at G Reschenthaler. And I just appreciate all the support. And Dennis, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Guy, we need to stay in touch because we sure see things the same way. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your great comments, for your service to our nation in uniform, and especially now. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Denny.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Karen Schoen about education in our nation. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. U.S. Law Shield is a part of Frontlines of Freedom team. If you have weapons for self-defense of yourself and your family, and you ever need to use a legal weapon, you'll need legal defense. U.S. Law Shield is the team my wife and I use. Go to uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time to do pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.